What's up, you guys? This is Speak Up, Speak Out. My name is Mariah Shields. I am so excited that you are listening to this podcast. Well, let's jump right in. How long have you been in teaching as well as educating, administration, all that stuff?
So I have been in education. I was a classroom teacher for 12 years, and I just finished my first year as a culture coordinator for a small charter school.
Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. I see. You set my game up.
No, right, same Ronnie, though. What about you? Hi, my name is Ronnie. I am a math teacher for 6th and 7th graders at Uplift Charter School.
Okay, so we got charter schools in the house. All right, charter schools. All right. Ashley, when you first started teaching, what were some challenges that you faced while you were teaching?
So I started off teaching in 2007. I was 22, 23 years old at the time. Some major challenges for me were applying what I had learned in a real setting with real kids and other people's kids, and really navigating like my relationships with them and their families and the administration, and balancing that sort of like trifecta of relationships. Like, that was really the toughest part. And then I think the lesson planning and stuff was natural for me, but just executing it in the most effective way was tough.
Got you. What about you, Ronnie?
The most challenging thing about teaching is honestly balancing teaching with my personal life and all the other endeavors that I have going on. Teaching is such a, and this isn't in a negative way, but it is such a consuming career that I'm balancing ways on a daily basis to, you know, live my own life and figure out my own identity. I'm also 23 years old, so I'm a young teacher and I teach 7th graders. And so I'm only, I want to say, about 10 years older than them. And so just balancing out like my youth within the classroom, but also gaining respect within the classroom. There's so many elements that happen, but that's probably the major thing.
Okay. Going back to Ashley, what's the best advice you've been given about teaching?
Teaching is about learning. And I had a lot of great mentors when I was starting out and like throughout my teaching career. And it really, I guess the advice given was like, always remain humble enough to learn and remain in a growth mindset. So just remembering that I'm a teacher, but I'm also a learner as well.
Okay. What about you, Ronnie?
That was my exact answer, to remain a student, honestly.
Yeah.
You'll notice that when you walk into the classroom, you think you have control over a space, when in reality, you're being taught so many things about yourself from people who you once, or who you thought you would never learn from. Like Ashley said, you have to have a humble spirit, but also just be grateful for moments like that you can consistently learn. A lot of people doesn't have that opportunity. But also one thing that I would say too is just be open to feedback. And this takes a level of humility as well, but and studentship, right, as well. But there's gonna be so many moments where you're receiving feedback, not only from your students, but also from your administration, and you just got to be ready to take it in and readjust, on the spot. And so that's why a lot of people are not really amazing at being an educator. It's mainly that, because they don't know how to listen and then apply.
Right. I agree with that. I agree with that 100%. Yeah. So what was the best part of teaching for you, Ashley?
The best part of teaching for me had to be when I taught high school, because I did teach K-12 for 6 years. My first 6 years I spent in elementary, 2nd through 5th grade, and I taught English, social studies, and I integrated fine arts. And my last 6 years in education, or in the classroom, were with 11th and 12th graders, and I absolutely love the high school age group. Just being able to really see very tangible results, like in 1 or 2 years, they're already in college, they're moving on into adulthood, and you can almost immediately see the growth if you're at it in the right way. So I guess that was for me like the most rewarding time was when I taught high school.
Mm, okay. Mm-hmm. What about you, Ronnie?
I'm wondering if me and Ashley are currently the same person. But what I was gonna say, I definitely see that being in the high school realm as well. Like, I'm not in high school, but I could see why you would think that. I'm in the middle school age. I teach sixth and seventh graders, and mm-hmm. so with that, you know, it is a very prime time. It's like you see a student on the first day in August, and they're a totally different person by December. Mm-hmm. They're a totally different person by March. They're a totally different person by May. And honestly, this quarantine has taught me how important, you know, seeing the increments of growth are, because I felt like, I was like, oh my gosh, like, are my students growing? I was wondering what they were missing the entire time, because I couldn't see them, you know, because I couldn't impede my lessons of, you know, my little 2 cents that I thought I could give them, or, you know, I wasn't able to take notes and watch them grow. I know that some of my students had birthdays over quarantine. Like, it was all of those little moments that I knew were pivotal in their life, that those were like growing moments for them that I wasn't really there for. But yeah, I would agree. The growth mm-hmm. aspect.
Definitely.
Okay. Ashley, mm-hmm. what kept you, like, I guess, sturdy and not being burnt out being a teacher?
Oh man, I started off young, and I love that Ronnie's like, you know, balancing my personal life. Like, I started off in my 20s. I had fun. I did things all, you know, that had nothing to do with education and teaching. And one of the biggest and most important rules I learned early was not as much as I could control, because we grade papers and we have to put grades in and all that.
Right.
Was not to take as much, not to take work home as often as possible. And so
I
live by that rule. Yes, right. I did my best to maintain that. It was a fun rule to maintain, honestly. And just being like, you know what, at 4 o'clock or 4:30 or whatever time I gave myself, I'm shutting it down, and I'm going to completely disconnect from this. And when I come back to it, I'm fresh. So that was like my biggest thing. And then I could work out, I could hang out with friends, I could have a good time and do all the life things that I needed to do apart from being a classroom teacher.
Okay. I agree with that. I like that. Cause I think some teachers, especially maybe the first year ones or the ones mm-hmm. that don't really have, I guess, that mentorship, they will go into, you know, the educational system and they'll be taking grades home and be doing too much and then be all burnt out at the end of the year. And you're just like, oh, well, you know,
right.
Yeah.
Chill
out a little bit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. What about you, Ronnie? Do you want to add anything on to that?
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah. Yes. What basically what I said is, how did you maintain basically not getting burnt out during, you know, being an educator?
Yeah, and I'll add on, I guess, but it's really just learning the balance, remembering that I am a person first.
Yes.
A lot of your teacher journey, because I mean, this is technically my first year going into the classroom, teaching my own class. Last year, I was more in a residency program, but because of my personality, I'm like, like, I give a lot to the culture of this space. I give a lot to the, you know, education of my students. And so, and an advisor did a very good job at, you know, making the classroom both of ours. But I think even in this step forward of like officially being a first year teacher, just really focusing on my own personal endeavors and how I'm able to bring that into the classroom will allow me to not be burnt out, because it doesn't feel like I'm running from this place to that place to that place. I'm figuring out how to mesh it all together and or keep it far apart.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay. So, Ashley, can you tell me about some ways that you kept your classroom management up?
I learned when I taught high school, I started using restorative practices, and that really helped classroom management. When I taught elementary, it really is, I guess, the foundation of any good classroom management system, regardless of like the style, is building good relationships with kids. And I learned that really early on. And so I pride myself in having had those really great relationships with kids where I could reason with them and talk to them and communicate with them in a way that showed that I cared and also was invested in like maintaining high standards, making sure that they exhibited the proper behavior, and whatever capacity, like whether that's just like their behavior or carrying out whatever content or lesson we're working on. And then by the time I did learn how to practice, use restorative practices, that carried over as well. So building relationships was like my strong suit in the classroom.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right. What about you, Ronnie? You want to add on to that? Because I heard you say,
these are my answers. I guess going into a deeper thing, just listening. As a teacher, I really had to learn how to close my mouth and just really become a facilitator. And it made classroom management so much easier because we weren't speaking over one another. And they felt like it was a safe space as well.
Yeah.
In terms of it being their classroom, it being their time to make a mistake and learn from it, it being their time to really understand who they were as a person that they're becoming. Like I said, I have middle schoolers, so a lot of it is people managing as well, right? Beyond, it's not even classroom management. It's like, how are you managing your own emotions? How are you managing this decision? How are you managing when a question is difficult? How are you managing all of these different things at the same time? And it really just took time for me to, like Ashley said, build a relationship so that it isn't even, I'm not really, you know, badgering you when you do something wrong. It's more of a conversation and how we can fix it in the next situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So our next question is, what's the best lesson you've ever taught? I'll go to Ashley.
I guess so how do I frame this? My best lesson. So when I taught high school, I taught a course called Advanced Placement or AP Language and Composition. And the class is primarily about like rhetoric and writing and argumentation. Okay. And it's mostly based on nonfiction texts. So we did a lot of like, you know, we read a lot of speeches and did a lot of analysis on that. So the very first thing I ever showed my juniors, because it was a course primarily for juniors, 11th graders, was a video of a speech by David Foster Wallace. And he gave a speech. Sorry, that's my dog.
You're good.
You might have to edit this part out. he gave a speech called This Is Water and it's a commencement speech. I'm pausing here because they're barking still. And my husband just came home. Let me let them out real quick. Give me 1 second.
Okay.
Okay. So David Foster Wallace, best lesson. I would show my students this speech during the first few weeks or few days of school. And it was always sort of the speech that we would come back around to because everything in the class sort of resonated with the overall theme, which was just to maintain simple awareness and always be aware of what you're thinking. And so it really taught the students to be self-aware and self-critical in a really positive way. So that was always my favorite thing to teach. And it always carried through to the very end. And to this day, I have former students that'll be like, Miss Hill, this is water, you know? So it's a great speech.
I like that. That means you impacted their life. That's that's deep. Okay. All right, Ronnie, what about you, girl?
The best lesson I probably have taught is the first time that I had a Socratic seminar in my math class.
Love it.
And I really leveraged this moment so that, like I said, I one of my main goals as a official first year teacher was to become a better listener. And so I wanted to make sure that I heard what my students were saying and how they were really assessing, you know, what was going on. And so all they really had to do, I mean, it was a simple task, but I knew it's usually the simplest questions that'll be the longest conversation. And so with that, I had my students create their own restaurant. Really, the lesson was about percentages, decimals, and fractions, but they had to discuss who they wanted their demographic to be, what kind of food they wanted to have, if it had any cultural representation, how they would, you know, maintain management, how they would be a good supervisor and things like that. And so it was really discussion based, attached to, you know, of course, the numerical translation of fractions to decimals to percentages and why they matter, why we look at data in certain ways. Is it bias? Things like that. But having it in a Socratic seminar form, of course, like I said, allows them to speak a lot more, and not just with okay, this is 2/4 and it is also 50%, right? Right. You get to see a little bit deeper into their understanding about why do you even care about fractions and data and numbers? Wow. And how does it relate to everyday people? So
I love that. I love Socratic seminar. I love that you use it in the math setting. That's dope. That's amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I like that. Okay, wow. See, I just need to step my game up. I just need to stop playing games, guys. All right. So our next question is, what's the worst lesson you taught?
Oh, boy. All right. Ooh, ooh.
So many.
Child. So many. Yeah, let's talk about that.
Oh, boy. So Ronnie, you can go first, or Ashley. So
wow, this is the one you want me to go first
for? That's not fair. Don't do that to her.
I definitely know you have one, Ronnie.
Man, so, cold-blooded.
I know, right? My girl over here, she said, listen, lead us off. Nah, I got you.
So funny.
I'm not going to pinpoint one because, like, there's so many, especially as a first year teacher. But what I can say is the ones that are, it's the ones that maintain no value. It's the one that only looks for how does this represent on a test? How would this translate to their SAT score? Is the one that only cares about the number and not the person. And as, like I said, as a first year teacher, we have so many of those, one because of lesson planning and lack of creativity and laziness. And there's just the host and tiredness, right? As a teacher, we are human. And so there's like, okay, I'm just gonna give this to them. And it might look like a worksheet today because, hey, right? And you really have to balance that out. But like I said, I've had too many, but they've mainly surrounded just surface level mathematical knowledge and not really conceptual knowledge on the deeper end.
Okay.
Nice.
You came in there and you won. Okay. All right. What about you, Ashley?
Worst possible lesson. I would say the times whenever I tried to teach second grade math. Every time a failure, like it just wasn't good. I was not, it just wasn't my strong suit, and I'm glad that I no longer teach that.
She's free.
Yes, okay. I am free.
At least you're honest. Policy, okay? So, all right. So our next question is, what's a time where you wish you'd done something differently in the class? Or even a situation with one of the students?
Can you repeat that question? You broke up.
Oh, okay. The question is, what's a time where you wish you'd done something differently? It can be with a student of how maybe you handled a situation, or it could be maybe the way you taught a lesson, any of those. I'll go back to Ashley. So, Ashley, if you want to start.
I'm sorry. I missed that. You lost me.
No, you're good. You're good. What's a time where you wish you'd done something differently, like in the classroom, or it can be like maybe a situation you had with a student?
You know what? I will be very transparent here. When I first started out, I wasn't aware of like how to be culturally relevant.
Okay.
And I had a diverse group of students, and I said something that was very offensive to one of my students, and that they were surprised. I didn't understand what it was at the time. And then when their parent explained it to me, it was really it was difficult for me to hear because I just didn't have the framework for understanding it. So I wish that I had more training and understanding of like how to be culturally relevant and inclusive.
Gotcha.
So, mm-hmm.
Okay. What yeah. about you, Ronnie?
I'm deeply thinking. I'm thinking it probably has to do something with like parents or administration, honestly. Okay. Those are two of the hardest groups of people to work with because they make a mm-hmm. lot of decisions and yes. Assumptions based on a classroom that they never really step into. Mm. And so I think I really can't listen. This podcast right now or this talk or conversation is hard because I've completely removed my brain from teaching for my summer vacation. But with all of that being said, I can probably say it has something to do with, you know, having a certain discussion with an administrator that could have been more, you know, strategic, with just more like conversation about how to fix things and not more like more into what the problem was, I guess. I feel like a lot of times we dwell on the problem and not the solution, and especially with administration and especially charter school. And so it really probably had to do with that.
Okay. Okay, so getting on that topic you just brought up. So we're going to switch it a little bit.
Okay.
We're going to talk about something, Ronnie, that we talked about when you did your podcast about the Brown versus education, I think, if I'm correct.
Brown v. Board.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So we are going to speak on that because you obviously know what's going on in the world. So, we're just going to do a little nice little U-turn. So, we're going to talk about that. So, how do you feel this whole pandemic, as well as some of the stuff going on in the world, is going to affect our education going further?
That's a big one.
Yes.
God bless. Let's just bless. I'm sorry if you have a different spiritual outlook, Ashley, but I just want to bless this question.
Go ahead. Take it.
No, I was going to say a slight point prayer. Just Jesus, take over the education system because
it's really
going for a turn. And I think because it's in so much uncertainty, we're kind of just responding in erratic ways. We don't really know what to do. And everyone's afraid that they don't know what to do. But I'm so happy and grateful that you are on the call, especially as a form of administration. Mm-hmm. And so I would like to hear from you.
Listen. I feel like, you know, there are so many wonderful educators out there that are doing the work of an anti-racist, anti-biased education. And that is what we really, really need to be thinking and focusing on right now, thinking about. And so as an administrator, like I'm still so very close and tethered to classroom teachers because it's been my profession since the day I stepped out of the college classroom and into my own classroom.
Right.
And so what I've learned over time, is that in a democratic society, which is what we claim to live in right now, we have to think about the kinds of students we want to produce. We have to think about the kinds of people that we want them to become. And because we have to think about that, we also have to consider the kinds of teachers we allow into our classrooms. Mm. And because of that, we also have to consider the decision-making and the kinds of administration that we are perpetuating. We live in a society right now, in our democratic society, that is dominated by white supremacy, straight up, period, sheesh, point blank. And because I'm just cutting to the chase, because of that, right? Because of that, our education system is also steeped in that dominant narrative.
Yep.
Historically, Brown v. Board was a small blip in terms of like the impact of this on education. Okay, so we still have issues of segregation in schools. We still have issues that the problem now is we don't readily address it because we feel that this country is somehow post-racial when it is not.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
And so we're dealing in a system that's steeped in the dominant narrative. And so because of that, we have to consider how we can now correct it eradicate it and deal with that. So for me, in my context, to bring it home to like what I'm doing on my, for my part as a culture coordinator, is I am doing my best. And actually I just got the green light from my district. Shout out to RSPA, Rhodes School for Performing Arts, because we're doing this work in Texas. We're doing this, we're predominantly Black and Brown teachers, predominantly Black and Brown kids. And the administrators are really hands-on, the school leaders are hands-on, and we're talking about ways to steer us in the direction of anti-racist, anti-bias, restorative, culturally relevant teaching and education, which I believe is going to be the work that changes education in this country. I think that's the way forward. As of right now, it's research-based, it's best practices. So if a school district right now at this time is still not verbalizing or communicating that they are moving in that direction, then they're just going to be perpetuating more of the same. Because that is truly where we need to be heading.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I love that. That was good.
I love that. Listen, I got my notebook out. I'm taking notes.
Hey, let's go.
Send me the invite. Talk about please. It.
Yeah, I'm for ready. Sure. I'm ready. Yeah.
Ronnie, do you want to add anything on to that, or?
Yeah.
Ronnie.
Uh-oh. Oh, she cut out.
Yeah.
Let's give it a few minutes to see if she can get back on.
Right. Oh, that's good. Hold on. What part of Texas are you in?
I'm in Houston.
Oh, okay.
Kingwood, to be exact. Kingwood.
Okay. I'm in right now, currently. Oh, Ronnie, you back?
Testing. One. Testing. Hey, can someone hear me?
Yes. We can hear you now.
Yes. Okay. Someone called me. I'm sorry. It kicked me off.
You're good.
Black people, Black kids, Black children, Black education. All right, great. I'm back.
Yes, love it.
So I was going to say, I'm in a very unique situation because I am a New Yorker born and raised, but I started teaching in Fort Worth, Texas. And so two totally demographics of how I understand education and what I've grown to know education to be as a child and a growing adult, right? And then I also went to NYU, predominantly white institution, and then went to Fort Worth, Texas, where we kind of have, of course, a diverse population, but I am a Black educator, I'm a Black woman educator, and so I have a responsibility on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. And it was so funny to me that, you know, in our teacher group chat, in our group meet, everyone had everything to say about quarantine. We were receiving daily updates about everything happening in the world. Like, I was totally updated on National Barbecue Day, like all of these things that white folks might love to speak about, right?
Yes.
And as soon as George Floyd has a foot or a knee on his neck, no one really has anything to say, right? As soon as Black lives are a matter on camera, once again, no one really knows how to respond. We don't really
see that.
I know people are watching the news, but you know, no one in the group chat is talking. and as a Black educator, you know, that is the fuel to my fire, because that just means that we still have people within the system that are choosing to see what they want to see, right? It's a choice for them. It's a privilege. It's an option. Me and my folks, right? It's only three Black educators in my school. We do have a small population of Black teachers out of 14. Our dean and our principal, they're both Black women as well. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting dynamic of how, you know, my school functions. But I took not a second to definitely post some memes with very, you know, forward thinking. There were conversations, there were book lists, there was a lot of accountability in my conversation in that group meet, because I felt some type of way.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Good for you.
That teachers, you know, had choice even still while teaching Black kids. And I don't think they understand how much they impact, you know, these kids' lives on a daily basis. And so I agree with everything that Ashley said, but in addition, there's still more work to do.
Oh, absolutely.
And I love what you're doing like I said, send me the invite because I'm ready to shake the table on everybody who still feels comfortable with with living in silence. Like one of the teacher's responses was, I'm silent because I don't know really what to say. It's not that I'm not seeing it, but I don't know really what to do or say. And I'm like, well, you didn't ask any questions.
There you go.
Questions and comments. You want to create, you want to create professional development around everything else. But when it comes to this, you're suddenly silent.
Yeah.
I'm like, we're here for resources. Why not?
It's true. I started doing some work in terms of anti-racist, anti-bias. I started doing that work, I want to say year 5 or 6 of my teaching career, when I really started learning the language and learning a lot more about how to do that and how to interact mm-hmm. with my students in that way. And that it was important and much needed. And as I started to do that work, I found teachers that were very resistant to it and very oppositional to the content. Like, well, I don't see color. And so we have this colorblind sort of, mentality. And I'm like, our students, they are multiracial, they are multicultural, and it's really important for us to see them fully. And if we're going to teach the whole child, we need to teach the whole child. And so, Those are important things. And so I have had to check my colleagues in a lot of ways too, that it's uncomfortable, but hey, look, this is what we have to do. And I would rather ask forgiveness on teaching anti-bias education than I would asking permission to do the work.
Right.
So that's just where I'm at with it.
Okay. I definitely agree with everything that both of you guys said. Change needs to come. And if change doesn't come, then we're going to just keep repeating history. And we're going to do this, the years down the line, be it education, be it worldly, all of it. Like, we're going to keep reliving this. And I feel that if somebody was able at a time, which there has been leaders back in the day that stood up and said, hey, what you're doing is not okay. But, I watched this video. I don't know if you guys saw it on Facebook, because there's been videos on Facebook like every day, basically. But there was a video. And there was a man talking to an older gentleman, and he was telling him, and he was talking to him about this 16-year-old. And he's like, if we don't do it differently, this 16-year-old is not going to know how to be different in the next generation. Like, if we keep teaching them to just...
Bingo.
Yeah, just keep getting aggressive, keep getting mad, keep blowing up stuff, keep doing this, we're not teaching them what they need to do. There is
Work
that needs to be done. The older generation needs to step up and start kind of, I guess, using their voice in a level of talking to this younger generation. Hey, don't accept this. This is not okay. Stop doing basic things. Start businesses. Stop doing mediocre things and start a business. You don't want to work for people? Then start a business. You want to make money a different way? Then do it. Stop, a lot of times when people make visions or they come up with things they want to do, they don't always execute it, or they don't always feel, oh, well, I'm insecure about it, or what if somebody doesn't like it? It's not all about that. It's about what are you doing for the next generation that comes up so they can be different. So, a lot of people, we've been having discussions about that, and especially in education. I actually taught second grade. I like second grade.
So, me too.
they're interesting, and I totally agree with you about the math, because I felt so unintelligent. I was like, oh my gosh, I like it. Like, I'm okay with math. Like, what is this?
I had a scripted system that really helped me, but if I didn't have that, I would have been really just, it would have been
was it something like Eureka?
It was, oh gosh, I can't remember the program, but it had a whole wall like that we had to set up, and we had math at a specific time. I can't remember the name of it though.
Yeah, I think we had, I don't remember the program we held either, but I don't know, that math was something else. That's all I'm going to say. I'd be sitting there, why did I take second grade again? Like, bro, I should have just did a different grade. Like, this was a bad idea, And then I kind of went from being a full-time teacher to then subbing and being able to see all the different age groups. And I totally agree when you stated about the high school. I feel like high school, man, that if you are able to establish a system with them, and I'll impart into them, oh my gosh, the things you can do to a kid.
Powerful. That, right.
You can do wonders, you know? And I always, I used to tell teachers, because at my school, we also had, it was prominent, prominent white, and administration was also white, and but we had a whole bunch of black teachers. And it was like, when you said anything that had to do with racial, they would shut you down. If you said like, hey, you know, like I would get on them. I got in a big, deep conversation with one of the principals because she was calling, she would call kids bad. And I, like, that will tear me up. Like, I will come out of unraveled. Because calling a kid bad, all you are teaching them, you're basically putting a label on them that's going to follow them. And then they're going to start believing. It's like when you tell somebody, hey, you're stupid. They start believing it because it's all psychological. So when you call a kid bad, what do? They step into what you said they are. They don't feel like they can be better or bigger, or they're not educated. So all these teachers would be saying that to these students, and I would come unraveled, and they'd be like, why are you so mad? Because stop calling them that. You're setting them up for failure. You wonder why they act bad? It's because you keep labeling them.
It's the Pygmalion. It's the Pygmalion effect. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it would always, and unfortunately, it would always be black kids. And that was my thing. I'd be so heated. So I had to, one of the teachers was like, oh, she's bad. So you might want to talk to her. So the principal brings me in the office. And, you know, I'm sitting there. I'm calm. I'm just sitting there. And I basically say to her, I'm like, the fact that you're calling a student bad shows where your heart's at. You're not in this. As these teachers call these kids bad, your heart's not in it. And if your heart's not in it, then this is not your profession. Maybe you should find another one.
Yeah.
You don't call kids that.
It speaks, the words we use, the language that we use communicates our perception and our value system.
Yep.
And that's part of this conversation about race and even gender identity. Yep. And so we have to really start to think about how we use words and how we communicate, you know, our values and our perceptions when it comes to education.
Okay, so my next question would be, three black women. We are educators. We are motivators. We are everything, a lot of things. But what can we do as educators, business people, everything like that, to help give, you know, students as well as even people we know more of a different perspective, as well as give them ideas that they can do to educate more people on, you know, racial things and things like that. So what can we do?
My first response and the thing that came to my mind first was just remembering what Ronnie and I both said earlier, and that's to remain open to learning. And I value reading and research and trusting experts in the field. And there are so many amazing experts in education that are doing the work that we can learn from. And so not perpetuating practices that are outdated and clearly are not equitable for students, but remembering that the good work is being done and to seek that out and to continue to learn and gain understanding.
Okay. What about you, Ronnie?
What do we do? Yeah, I think we need to have more dialogue. I feel like education is, of course, it's universal, but everyone is all over the place. None of us are speaking to each other. None of us are really, and maybe that's me because I'm into the education field, but I feel like even still coming into it, I should know of a direct resource where I'm like, okay, where is this conversation happening, right? And we say that we care and we say that we want to do these things, but like Ashley was saying, there needs to be more listening, more studentship from the people. I think there also just needs to be an uproot in racial things that affect education. There are so many laws, there are so many practices, right? It's not by accident that I want to go into education policy. And I think this is a good segue into this, but the reason that I even got into education was because I felt like literally as a student in high school, I felt oppressed you know, and of course, yes. I did not even have the language for it. I was just mad because we didn't have a library or an auditorium or a gym, like natural resources that should be on the premises of an educational space in order to, for my betterment as a student. Like, we literally just did not have it. You know, and I'm watching mm-hmm. all of these students in other districts and other schools have all of these things. And right for me as a high school student, I'm like, I just want my basic rights. Give me a library. Like, can I just get a library? Right. I don't want right. the three shelf library in my English teacher classroom. Like, I actually where I could just fall in love with books again. Right.
Or right, right.
I want a physical space where I could like work out and meditate and do yoga. I'm seeing all these things, right? And watching just like High School Musical and like all these things that look like a mm-hmm. cool educational experience, one that actually grows a child, one that actually builds a student and like helps them with their resources. But no, I did not receive it. So literally I was like, I'm going up to the district, right? This is little old Ronnie in high school. I'm like, I'm speaking to the Chancellor of Education. I have words for her, right? And this is me, like Black Power. And then you understand that, you know, you got to wait hours for a meeting with the Chancellor of Education. And, you know, it's like all of those things are kind of shot down. And I said, so, you know what, I'm just going to have to do this as my life work, because it's I'm really passionate at the fact that I felt like something was stripped away from me just because of where I lived. Right. As valedictorian right. of my high school, I knew what I deserved. Like, no one could tell me that I did not deserve what I knew that I should have as one, a hard worker, two, one mm-hmm. that just deserved equitable rights. One yes. like quite literally. And remember, I'm going to school in the South Bronx. So if you know research. And you know mm-hmm. that is an area, that is a space where literally all resources are depleted. And so mm-hmm. we're facing way more than educational inequity, but of course education is the center, right? It is the epicenter of all of the things that are going wrong in the world. We see, and that was yes. another thing that quarantine has taught me, right?
Like, oh yeah, oh
when,
yeah.
When the schools were closed, okay, so now the nurses are gone, right? Some kids rely on their doctor's visits by the nurses in their school. That's where they get their physicals from.
Yeah.
Or the lunches. Now we're worrying about yeah. kids not having three meals a day, right? Yeah. Or Metro cards. Kids don't have transportation. Or just, you know, pads. Like some of my students were like, okay, where am I getting my feminine products from?
Yep.
Abusive households. Like, we're worried yep. about all my kids that are in the shelter, or, you know, that we were having difficulties with their parents, and students literally found their safe haven in the schoolhouse. Right. Yep. So these are all the things that are being stripped away and taken away because we can't now have the physical space of school. But it's like, what does it look like when you add on being Black on top of all of that?
Right. Right.
As a student, what does advocacy look like?
Wow.
Yeah, I think the COVID-19 quarantine has really exposed a lot of the failures of our systems right now, like
yeah.
how very broken many of our systems are mm-hmm. all together.
So. It's a lot. It's a lot.
It is.
And yeah, I think Ronnie, you're definitely hitting everything, because
for sure, absolutely.
A lot of mm-hmm. students, you know, obviously, you know, when it came to being able to do those online classes and being able to talk to your students, sort of. Through mm-hmm. Zoom and stuff, you can
see them. If they showed up.
True facts, because if mommy and daddy didn't yep. want to show up, then, or yep. the parent doesn't care, then, hey,
yep.
it is what it is, right? So mm-hmm. I think that seeing some of those students, you know, you could tell that they were going through it. Like, a lot of them. And I feel that, you know, after this COVID, a lot of kids are not going to be the same. They're not going to look the same. And, you know, I mean, I've been watching the news, and I don't know if you heard on the news about that kid that they like locked in the, it was like a basement or something. And they didn't even check on him. And somebody like called the police on him to come get the
wow.
kid. I'm like, why would you put your kid? Why are you blaming the kid for why they're home? It's not the kid's fault. When did we stop being parents again? I'm sorry.
Okay.
Wow.
But that's another topic on another day. But yes. So my last question while we wrap up is, how can we be role models for Black women as well as Black girls coming up in society being educators? Because a lot of Black women, especially the older ones or the ones that are, you know, a little older, we don't know how much impact we have on those little kids or those little faces that look at you or those little words you give some of the kids. So how can we, as educators or in general, just people, humans in society, how can we basically help out black girls coming up?
For me, I think the biggest impetus for me in terms of educating young Black women is remembering that I never had a me. I didn't have a Black woman teacher growing up at all. And so it really did, that actually empowered me to become someone that I didn't have. And just really modeling for them what Black womanhood could look like for them. Not what it is, but what it could look like for them. Like giving them a possibility of hope of, here's a way of being that I can model for you. And I was modeling that regardless of, you know, whatever race or gender my students were. I really wanted them to see like a possibility of a way of being, not so much, you know, I mean, yes, identity is of course an intersection of like of life, but like that your identity matters and here's how you can live it out in a way that is beneficial for you. And so I just tried to model what I was hoping for and what I would have wanted to see growing up. And what I did see in other ways, you know, besides education and being in the classroom.
I like that. What about you, Ronnie?
I love that answer, first of all. I was like, wow. That one way that I consistently work on, I guess, motivating my students or just, you know, just pouring into them is just by giving them exposure. And I realized that was one thing that I really, really, really wanted. I was like, what is out there in the world, right? I think, like Ashley was saying, we have such small minds and pieces of what Black womanhood can look like. And even though there's with such a variety of people and a variety of aspects, like, I mean, me and Ashley the same person, but we're probably so different in so many ways too, right? And so I think this is necessary, right? Like, I'm being exposed to two different Black women on this call right now.
This
is going to take me to the next level just by hearing and seeing different forms of Black womanhood, how we speak, how we dress, how we, you know, handle certain situations, everything. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just exposure. You have to have some Black girls. It's kind of that when it's life. It's like, no, I'm today because I'm the age to the name, you know, what does it feel like being the only Black person in the room, you know, right. Or what does it feel like? Because I mean, you know, I went from NYU only exchange experience and being in a life full of Black people, and I was like, okay, so how do you find your identity when there's only Black people in the room? Poor experience in the South Bronx to going to a place like a lot of the people can college, and looking at what it look like. Change my what I've never seen this before. I don't even know what money can look like or could look like, or at least in my bank account or my household, but now I'm exposed to that, right? It is a different level of confidence in how I show up in a space as a Black woman. So just from having multiple or multifaceted experiences within my life. Sure.
Right. And I think I definitely agree with you, Ronnie, on that, because of the fact that having that exposure of it, you know, helps you to, you know, kind of consume knowledge from other people. You know what I'm saying? So it always elevates you to the next level, just like you said. And I agree with that. I feel you should have a definitely, my dad always says, don't be the, you know, smartest one in the room. You need mm-hmm. some smarter people than you yep. so you can get educated as well.
Yep. Continue to grow.
Yeah. So you're not just pouring. It's not you right. pouring all the time. You're also right. getting poured into as right. well.
Yeah. yeah.
And if it's not that way, you might want some new friends. I'm yeah. just going to say that, you know. Not throwing no shade or anything. But yes, thank you for coming through. Ashley, is there anything coming up that you want everybody in the world to know? You want them to be a part of? Like, you want to drop Instagram? Anything like that?
My Instagram handle is the_actual_Ashley. Okay. And I'm on Twitter, but I'm not really that great at Twitter. I'm gonna be real. It freaks me out. I do love Black Twitter though. Shout out to Black Twitter. Yeah. and I'll be Dr. Hill in August 2021. So be on the lookout for that.
I'm like, oh, wait, don't do that.
Yeah.
It's going to reel me. Ah!
Right. Right.
Okay. It's like, that means she, you know.
Look. Right. Hey, she don't know me.
Oh, I do have one more thing. In October 22nd, I will be giving a virtual presentation for the National Association of Multicultural Education. Okay. The title of my presentation is The Transgressive Educator Toward Hope and Liberation. So I will send you information about how to get involved with that.
Oh, yes, please do. Yeah. Because then I can drop it on all the pages, all my
stuff. Yes. Thank you.
And everything like that to support you.
Put it on your announcements, Mariah.
What's 100. That?
What's I said, put it on your announcement.
Oh, I am. Don't worry. We gonna take the world, okay?
Listen, we gonna take the world.
All right. What about you, Ronnie? Because you know you be foreign exchanging. So go ahead, Ronnie. You still there?
Oh man.
Man, we were getting ready.
She'll be back. All right, let's wait for her. She'll be back.
Oh, man, we were going.
Oh, she dropped. I hope she comes back on.
She'll be back.
Okay.
She probably got a phone call because she does foreign exchange. Like, she's she's always getting phone calls. Ronnie, you there?
Testing.
Are you there, girl? Hello?
Okay, yes, I'm here.
Hey.
Yeah.
Okay, so back to me, you know, giving you your thing. Okay. Hey, Ronnie. So, girl, like, you do foreign exchange? Like, hit me with it.
I'm done. What do you want to know?
Hit me with it. Like, tell me, like, give me the deeds. Okay. I'm trying to know.
I came to the foreign exchange market. It is a $7.3 trillion market. That's how much money it circulates on a day-to-day basis. I am a mentor and I teach people how to invest in the foreign exchange market as well. Through our educational platform, IAM Academy. And so if you would like to learn how to invest as a millennial, as a Black millennial, I would be so happy to do so. My Instagram is the Ronnie Davis, TheRahniDavis. I'm a Black woman educator. I love mathematics. I love teaching universal languages. That's me.
Oh, okay. Excuse me. I'm gonna get like you someday. I just love that.
I'm still catching up to you, Mariah. I'm still catching up.
Girl. But I do appreciate you guys for coming through. I am super excited for everybody and everything that everybody is doing. Keep up the hard work. Keep pushing. You are Black and you are beautiful.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much. This was great. I love your energy, Mariah. Thank you so much. And Ronnie, it was so nice to meet you. Let's connect. Let's stay connected. Yeah.
Shout out to Fort Worth, Texas.
Yeah.
I might just have to put y'all on like a group message. Like, y'all.
Yeah, let's do it.
I need it.
Put us on. Yeah.
Don't be alarmed.
All right.
If you get like a text,
Okay.
I'll be ready. I'll be ready.
All right. I'll talk to you guys later. Bye.
All right. Bye, y'all. Thanks.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
How are you?
I'm good.
That's good. All right. So we're going to jump right in. I guess I'll get with the other teacher probably later. She might be asleep. So, yeah. All right. So, is there anything you wish you... Hold on. What type of teacher are you?
I'm a preschool teacher. I'm under 2-year-olds. So I have 1-year-olds and a couple 2-year-olds.
Okay.
It's a little bit different.
Okay. Okay. So the questions are kind of can answer them. But some of them I'll go past because it's a little different. It's a little different.
They have a mind of their own.
Yes. So what's the best advice that you've gotten from maybe somebody else that has told you about teaching with that age group?
Just to have your patience. Have patience.
Okay.
They will take your patience from you.
Okay. All right. That is very true. That age group is wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. in your opinion, what's the best part of teaching that age group?
Being able to see their personalities blossom and grow.
Okay. Can you give me an example of that?
So I have how old is she? About 18 months.
Okay.
She doesn't really talk. She'll whine at everything. And now she'll start singing. I'll catch her singing some of the songs we've seen in class. And it's kind of cool being able to see them catching on with things you do every day in your routine.
Right.
And then play. They'll go inside of a playhouse outside.
Okay.
And start doing circle time inside the house.
That's so cute.
It's super cute.
Oh man. Okay. What's the hardest part of teaching that age group? If you can add like examples to it.
Having eyes on every little kid at once. We're not getting hurt or anything.
Okay. What is your ratio like? Because I know there's ratios.
Yeah. So right now we're not at full capacity.
Okay.
So some days we have 6. Okay. Some days we have 9.
Okay.
Some days we have 4.
Wow.
It all depends on the day.
Well, all right, man. Okay. This coronavirus definitely messed up your numbers. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, because when I went and tried the preschool out, we had 4 teachers, 24 kids.
Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy. And then you go to almost 4 or, oh man, that's crazy. Yeah.
It's sometimes nice when days we get 6 kids because one teacher can actually go and do something else that needs done, where one teacher can stay instead of having both of us stay there until we get down to 6.
Gotcha. Okay. So how do you stay organized with those kids?
You just have a calendar. Okay. You just go with the flow sometimes.
Okay. Hey, that makes sense. I remember definitely working with the age group and I was just like, man, I have this calendar, but I don't know if we're going to get to all this stuff, but I'm going to try.
We plan. So what we do is we do snack time outside or inside, depending on the weather. And then after snack time, we go inside for circle. And then after circle, we'll change diapers and everything. And then do like art and let the rest of the kids play while a couple do art. And then that's it. That's our day.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we let them play.
Sounds good. Mm-hmm. Okay. How do you keep yourself basically motivated and not to burn out with the kids?
I don't know that one. I've always wanted to do this. That's why. So it got me out of working at Dixie Line.
Okay.
So, I'm like, all right.
Something new. Right. Have you ever felt like you felt burnt out or like stressed out while you were taking care of them?
I just feel tired.
Tired. Okay. All right. We'll go past that one. What's the best lesson you've taught your kids? Because I know that you guys do have like a certain, I know most places have like set schedules. Do you guys teach them anything?
Well, we do. We try to, and sometimes it doesn't happen.
Okay.
Because they don't sit for very long at circle time. Once they start standing up and walking away from you, then we're like, all right, circle time's done. Sometimes we get to it, sometimes we don't. We teach them how to like wash your hands.
Okay.
After snack time or anytime they eat something, we're out washing their hands, showing them how to wash our hands and washing our face.
Okay.
And then having them throw their trash away instead of us always doing everything for them. Okay. I try to tell them, okay, I'm going to open the gate. You go throw it away.
Gotcha. So teaching them basic things they need to know when they grow up, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically. Pretty much, because some of them are getting ready to move up.
Okay.
To the next class where they do most everything themselves.
Got you. Okay. That makes sense. Okay. Oh, stop. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Just making sure. What's a time where you wished you'd done something differently? When you were, maybe one of the kids did something that you didn't agree with, or a situation happened, what do you wish you would have done?
So, it was actually this week that this happened. A little girl started learning bad words and started bringing them to school. So I was like, all right. First time I heard it, I was like, okay, I don't know if that's the right word I heard. What it was.
Oh, man.
And then she came back and she said it twice. And then I told the other teacher because it was the day we had only 6 kids.
Right.
And she's like, I was like, what do I do when a kid, I told her to be nice and not say those words.
Right.
But I let the first time it blow through. And then the third time I was like, okay, no. That's not okay.
Right.
And then we had to write a paper to the mom. Oh, shush. Sorry. Be careful with some of the kids we have in our class.
Right.
Because they're not technically guardians yet of them.
Yeah.
So we have to kind of be careful with them. And, of course, once I gave her the paper and told her the situation, what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Then 20 minutes later, once I was on break, my director comes to me and says, she's on the phone. And I was like, oh, that must be Raven's. Must be the kid's mom.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So they're like, yeah, you need to just play that one off when you hand that to her.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, I've had situations like that, especially with parents, because some parents take things out of context and you really gotta like explain to them, no, this is what happened.
Yeah.
You know, like,
and then she's like, no, our dog's name is Buck. And I was like, who names their dog Buck when you have a 1.5-year-old?
Almost. Right.
No, she was not using, it was not that word. She had other words following it.
Man, woo, gotta love that age group and the parents,
especially that one. I heard that, yeah.
Okay. what made you want to teach?
I liked the schedule that they had and that I was going to be around kids.
Okay.
I've always liked teaching.
Okay, all right, that sounds pretty much, yeah, I feel like that's everybody's thing. Okay, yep. So we're gonna jump into like 2 more questions and then I'll let you go to get back to your day. But the two questions are, the first one is, how do you feel like this pandemic is going to affect this age group coming up?
We started talking about this in my last semester's class when this happened. Because the kids that are above 2 years old have to wear the mask. And then the under doesn't have to because they'll just take it right off.
Right.
And the teachers have to wear it. They won't get to learn the emotional aspect of, because they need to see your face.
Right.
They need to see your face to get the full information. If they can't, then they won't learn. Yeah. My teacher was like, they might come out in 5 years, come out with a study about the kids that grew up during this pandemic and see what it's done to their brain and abilities.
It's gonna be tough. I feel like a lot of the kids are gonna, you know, some of them are gonna struggle, especially the ones that have maybe even disabilities and stuff. I feel like those ones are gonna be, that's gonna be a lot.
It's gonna be interesting what we learn. So we'll find out. See how it goes, because it's just like the documentary I watched for my class. It was called Babies. It's on Netflix. It's kind of interesting what goes on in a baby's brain.
Mm-hmm.
What they know and what they don't know.
Right. Yeah, I think that's very fascinating. What's the Netflix movie or the documentary?
It's Babies. It's about, so these scientists these six mom parents go to a doctor who does this research. Okay. And some of them are still pregnant, some of them are not. So some are 3 months to 6 months old.
Okay.
They put them in a room with the mom, and then they'll conduct tests. So there's one where the mom doesn't do anything and see how the baby reacts. And then there's another one where the mom walks out while the baby's playing, and then a stranger comes in to the into the room, but it's another doctor, and see what the baby does. And it's kind of interesting what the babies do.
I'm about to check that out. I know I've seen it on Netflix. I just haven't pressed it yet. So I'm definitely gonna have to go check. I need to go check that out. Yeah, I need to definitely go check that out. So how are you as a teacher? How do you want to impact the kids after this pandemic?
I probably won't want to teach this age group again. They test you a lot more. Probably still keep going to school. This is just to get my feet wet in the field.
Okay.
Not my forever job yet.
Okay. Okay. Well, what age group do you want to teach?
At least probably once they're potty trained.
Once they're potty trained. Okay.
Probably four, maybe kindergarten, first, second, elementary age.
Okay. Yeah. I could definitely see you being kindergarten or elementary. So definitely keep striving and getting your stuff done and getting as many teaching stuff done and everything like that so you can get to that level.
Yeah.
Yeah. But thank you for coming through. I appreciate you.
You're welcome.
Waking up early, kind of. Something like that. I will definitely
thank you to all my guests that came through. I hope you guys got something out of it. Stay tuned for the next episode. This is Speak Up, Speak Out, and we out.